All right, a few announcements. Just to let you know, we did get some significant help from Truth Bible Church on our Living Grace need. We will be sending them an appropriate thank you for their sacrifices on our behalf. And so we did get that need met. So again, no more Living Grace for now. And we'll deal with that if it ever comes up again in the future. Eileen's requested prayer. She's taking a trip July the 14th through the 27th. Obviously, things like flights and luggage and connections and Russians and, you know, viruses and all the things that, you know, are out there that are trying to kill us. But God will bless it and grease her skids and have a good time and all that and bring back lots of cool pictures. Bill? Bring back lots of cool pictures. So we can pretend we were there. And she didn't offer to take me, so I don't know what to make of that. But all right, second thing here we've got, if somebody would like to apply, what we do on the printed notes, especially the notes that contain the exegesis and the exposition of our chapters, we need someone who can make corrections after the fact. Like once you've got the notes. And like in class, I don't know, there was some place in here we saw something was wrong. Oh, not. And I think there was a not in there, and I said no. But making those kind of changes and then getting it back to me so that when we post the final version of these things, that they are as clean and appropriate and all like they should be with, you know, minimum. We're probably always going to have some typographical errors and that kind of thing, spelling, but... for the most part, that's if somebody would like to do that, let me know. You can either send me an email or whatever. Let me know if you'd like to do that, and we'll set up a time to talk about how to best go about that. All right, so let's make sure you are in fellowship now, and let's continue on here regarding this matter of things that worry us, anxiety, worry, fretting, concern. Over personal issues, of course, is discouraged. As we saw there when we closed in the book of Matthew, God tells his people, hey, I've got your back. I know what you need. And God takes care of lesser creation through his sovereign and providential will. Do you not think he will take care of you? Do you not consider yourself to be more valuable than animals? Well, now we live in a whole culture that doesn't. They don't think they're more valuable than animals. That's how stupid the human race has become. We're not animals. We're superior to the animals. Again, while we should be all for conservation and good management and all that, that's a basic function of stewardship. To elevate animals to greater in importance than humans is just mind-boggling to me. That they'll spend millions of dollars on animals. And humans, they can starve, live on the street, whatever. But again, you're not going to get the poor to go away. It's not like as though we could wipe out poverty just by one thing. Also, Philippians 4:6, that's our one we're going to have coming up here in a little bit about our thinking processes. Philippians 4:6, be anxious for nothing. Try not to let anything worry you. That's the Christian motto. That doesn't mean there's not going to be pressures or tests and that you may not have some anxiety. But recognize it for what it is. It's worry. It's a sin. And again, you have to draw a line between where you're properly considering factors and thinking through them in situations and where you've gone over the line to where you're just worrying about it. And knowing the difference may not always be easy, but we should strive not to worry. Be anxious for nothing. But in everything, and really you can translate this into our modern vernacular, quit worrying about anything. Don't worry about anything. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So again, in that regard, worry about personal issues is discouraged, while the matter of positive concern for others is commended. And that's where Timothy is in his deal. He has this positive concern for others that's reflected in his lifestyle. That he was willing to be Paul's gopher, if necessary, to do whatever mission he sent him on. And maybe everybody else didn't have quite that same attitude. I think, again, there may be a little hyperbole of what Paul says, but I think Timothy was a breed apart in some ways. That all believers are certainly not equal. But here, 12:26, if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. As a part of Christians in a body here in the local church, we are to be concerned with one another. If somebody is suffering, we should do what we can, pray for them, share in that suffering. And when you love people, it's hard because their pressures become your pressures. And that's the way it's supposed to be. We want everyone to make it. So if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. So we have to recognize that we're in all this together. We're not lone rangers out here on our own. Also, Philippians 2:20. I think that's the one we're working on, isn't it? Yeah, 2:20. I have no one else of kindred spirit. That's to looking out for the things concerning you, the things that pertain to you. So 30, although the verb is a future indicative, it should be understood that Timothy's concern was already present. Timothy cared for the Philippians, but his future visit would make that concern manifest. And the verb is qualified here by the adverb anasios, which means true, legitimate, or valid, which adds the idea of legitimately, sincerely, or genuinely. And that's the way they've translated it in the New American Standard. He's genuinely concerned. It modifies that verb. And the object of his concern is seen in the phrase, ata peri humon, the things concerning or pertaining to you all, which refers to all that pertains to the Philippians and all that's happening within the spiritual life of that church. And I'm sure there was, to some extent, even physical aspects of their life Paul would want to know about if it was significant. It may be expressed by the English idea of condition, affairs, or circumstances. And 33, verse 21, begins with another use of the conjunction gar, which continues the emphasis on Timothy and explains why Paul has no one like Timothy. It should not be taken as a second reason for sending him. Rather, it's an addition to that first reason there in the previous verse. I have no one else of kindred spirit because they all care about their own interests. That's their interest. That's why I'm sending Timothy. So 34, his explanation begins with the articular use of the adjective pas, all, which appears to introduce a somewhat unusual and startling criticism of everyone but Timothy. And the statement has given rise to a number of suggestions as to how one is to understand this statement in this context. Some say that it refers to the following. First, exaggeration, which is designed to contrast others with Timothy in such a way as to enhance the reputation and authority of Timothy by means of hyperbole. Speaking in excess about, you know, hyperbolo means to cast beyond, to throw beyond. And hyperbole is using language that's not really strictly true, but it's communicating a point that he is set apart like this. So B, they say it refers to evidence of Paul's irritation and feelings of hostility towards some of the Christians in Rome. Okay, I'm going to eliminate that one right away, but just to let you know that this is how some interpreters have looked at this. Philippians chapter 1, verses 15 and 17. And this is based on that business of some of the Roman believers there. And we can't be altogether certain they were all just Roman believers, but being that they're in Rome, you suspect that most of them were from there. Some, to be sure, are preaching Christ, even from envy and strife, but some from goodwill. And the former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition rather than from pure motives, thinking to cause me distress in my imprisonment. But Paul's attitude there, as we see in the very next verse, it wasn't one of irritation. It was one of, I'm going to look on the bright side of this. I'm going to choose to sort of ignore what they're doing and rejoice in the fact that the gospel's being proclaimed, and apparently rightfully so, that they were not teaching false doctrine. These weren't Judaizers. These weren't anybody adding works or some false doctrine to the gospel. These were people who were teaching the truth of the gospel. Now, why they wanted to hurt Paul, well, that's, again, a question that's up for debate. I suspect some of them were jealous of his success. That's a common human trait. Envious of other people's success. They want it for themselves. Envy more than jealousy, say. And that's what he calls it there, envy and strife. That's how they're functioning. But Paul didn't let that bother him. And to say that here, now he does this to kind of as an offhand swipe at them, I don't think so. I don't think that's at all in his thinking at this point. So this view should be immediately rejected since Paul has already addressed this issue. Further, there's no reason to believe that he would have chosen one of those believers for this mission anyway. I mean, really? You know somebody's hostile, you're going to go pick him for a mission? I don't think so. I don't think that would show Paul to be very smart at all. Well, they also think it refers to the cosmos at large, to say that the cosmos is described in terms of its selfishness. Well, first, he said, I have no one else. He's not referring to the whole world. But that, again, these are options that people have suggested, and I will shoot them down to show you why I think they're wrong. So the cosmos is always and often only concerned with its own pursuits. Why would Paul suddenly point that out in the midst of his commendation of Timothy? I mean, that seems like an odd place to put it. Hey, I'm commending Timothy, but the world's really horrible out there. What does that have to do with anything? It doesn't have anything to do with it. So that's why I reject this view. Now he says every believer in general. So there's nobody but Timothy in all the world that can do this. You have to rule everybody out. But that should be rejected since Paul has already expressed his high regard for the Philippians. And he speaks favorably of some of those in Rome with him. While he spoke unfavorably there of some of them because of their activity, he exposes their mental attitudes in this regard. But he says some are doing this out of goodwill and they do it out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel. Well, I don't think Paul had any heartburn with those people. But now, were they prepared, able, qualified even to go on this mission? Well, no, not necessarily. These are believers that are in their hometown, live in and around Rome, I suspect. So some of them he had, you know, he was fine with. But then also chapter 2, the next chapter over, verse 25. We're not quite there yet. And how can he say that he has got no one else that is like this and he's going to send Epaphroditus anyway? I think this would rule out Epaphroditus being in that group of being only concerned for himself. But obviously, and there's another reason he's going back, because he lives there. He's probably returning home. But I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger and the minister to my need. And that doesn't sound like to me that he's talking him down. That Epaphroditus would be one you wouldn't trust. I would think he trusted him. And certainly the Philippians had trusted him with what we would suspect was a fairly large sum of money to take to Paul. Well, the final option is that Paul is referring to those who were present with him. It is limited only to those who were with Paul in Rome, those who were available for a mission, and those who could be trusted to encourage and support the Philippians. And that's why I think he uses this language here. Is the language expansive? Certainly it is. But I think by just contrast, Timothy stands out as being a really quality individual that you can't get around. So what can safely be said again here is that Paul did not really have anyone he really trusted with this mission other than Timothy. And for instance, if you had a particular thing, if there was something that was pertaining to the church. Now, we don't have this because we're not mobile like they were. We're not spread out all over the place. And we're limited to a general geographic locale in terms of our canon. But if you had something that you had to do for the church, would you just send anybody here? Or would you pick a delegate that more reflected what the church believes, thinks, and could articulate all the things that I would want said if I were going to be there? And that's what Paul has got in Timothy. He's got a person that's after, that he serves Paul like a child, like a son. And that he's very faithful and very consistent. And he's demonstrated himself time and time again already. Timothy must have been relatively impressive in the initial stage of meeting Paul. because Paul takes him on his team without very much thought. He doesn't spend a long time there. But I think the word of Timothy had a good reputation among those where he lived. And they really knew him to be a quality guy. So what can safely be said is that he didn't have anyone he really trusted, other than Timothy, who possessed the two important characteristics of being like-minded with Paul. That's very important. Would I want to send somebody off who didn't really represent my thinking? No. Why would you do that? That wouldn't represent the local church very well at all, or in this case, the apostles' authority. But no, I would want somebody who I could trust. So he's like-minded with Paul, and he's more committed to the interests of Jesus Christ than his own pursuits. And that really sets him apart, because many believers do this some to some extent, but Timothy did it well all the time, apparently. It doesn't mean he didn't fail, but that he is commended very highly here. Well, 37, the verb zeteo, to seek, is used in a number of ways in the New Testament. But the sense of it in this context is devoting the effort necessary to realize one's desire or objective. Where he says, they all seek after their own interest. In other words, they'll put forth all the effort they need to get to Disney. They'll put forth all the effort they need to get what they want. They'll put forth all the effort they need for their vacation. And for this or that. And again, we're not against vacations. Have vacations, I don't care. I'm not against vacations. I'm against people that pursue them apart from God's will. That's the bigger issue. And if God drops something in your lap and bless you, that's way different. And we all should know the difference between those things. Where God just blessed me and I didn't do anything. I didn't lift a finger. Here it is. And that's the kind of blessing that you want. But people, and it's not just they'll pursue their job first, they'll pursue their other things first, their hobbies, their interests, all of this, their money, all the things that people want to pursue and put first. And he says, no, Timothy doesn't do that. He is genuinely concerned about your welfare. 1 Corinthians 10:24, and I've met a number of believers, and I wouldn't even be convinced they were concerned about my welfare, let alone the welfare of the church. And that's not somebody you're really going to trust. 1 Corinthians 10. But again, one of the things, as we've taught from day one, all of us are going to have our feet put to the fire over all this stuff. We're not taught this doctrine just to learn it, just to sit and say, oh, I know. It's to be applied in the pressure of the test. 1 Corinthians 10:24. Let no one seek his own good, but let him seek that of his neighbor. Looking out, and this is again, the more you study this, the longer I'm in this. And some of these books, I've been through Philippians and Ephesians, but they were non-recognizable, what I heard. And the more I go through this, the more this stands out of how selfish and self-centered and looking out for others first is just the opposite in some ways of what's been kind of indoctrinated into doctrinal churches, that you're in it for you. You want to get to the bema seat. And that's all fine and good. There's a truth to part of that. We're not debating that. But what's the real interest? What was Jesus' interest? What attitude did he manifest? And we just covered all that in there in 5 through 11, Philippians 2. So let no one seek his own good. And this doesn't mean in a universal sense. Obviously, you have to seek your own good at times. You don't say, I don't care what I eat. It doesn't matter. I'll just eat mud. You seek food you like. There's nothing wrong with that. You seek your own things. We all do. But, again, making it a lifestyle. That's the bigger issue. And also, chapter 14, verse 12. 1 Corinthians there. So also you, since you're so zealous about spiritual gifts, seek to abound for the edification of the church. The other people come first. Your spiritual gift is given to you for a reason. And it's not for you to show off. It's not for you to feather your own nest with it. It is for you to serve other believers. To help them where they need help. Again, whether you've got a speaking gift, a verbal gift, like prophecy or teaching or exhortation. Or you have one of the quieter doing gifts, like serving and ministry. That's help, serving. Giving and other mercy and things like that. So, whatever your deal is, you're here for others. That's why you're a part of this. God has placed us in the body as He sees fit. And but some people say, well, look, God placed me in this body, but I decided He's wrong. Well, okay, that's a risky line to take to me, that God must be wrong. If He put you where He put you, He put you there for a reason. Well, 38, the fact that it is a present indicative indicates that this is a reality of which Paul is keenly aware. The present tense should be understood as a customary use of the present, which refers to an action that regularly occurs or to an ongoing state. So when he says they all seek after their own interests, he means this is their lifestyle, that this is an ongoing, this is characterizes them, of failure to be properly concerned for others. So again, 39, the phrase "the interests of Jesus Christ" has the sense of what concerns Jesus Christ, those things that matter to him. And this certainly includes all that pertains to the gospel and salvation of unbelievers. Obviously, God's done everything in his plan. He has made the potential of salvation available to all men. We as lights in the world are to tell this truth as we have opportunity, to give people the gospel and see what they do with it. Most are going to reject it. You just need to know that going in, so it's not so discouraging. But again, that's why they call it fishing for men and not catching. The catching is when you just throw it in and they all jump right in your boat. That's good. But that doesn't happen very often, and it certainly doesn't happen spiritually in this late time that we've seen. People are moving the opposite direction from the doctrine and from gospel. They're headed in very much the opposite directions. So this certainly includes all that pertains to that. Further, it includes all that is necessary to promote spiritual growth and excellence among believers. During this dispensation, Philippians 1:10, we saw that early on in the book here, that a part of his prayer for them was that they would abound. Again, this matter of being adequate, we don't strive for adequacy, we strive to abound, to excel. That your love may abound still more and more, verse 9, in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent, in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ. And so again, this matter of understanding, of discernment, of discretion, of being able to put into play what you know, this is what believers should concern themselves with. 41, in the case of the Philippians, it should include the desire and willingness of Paul's emissary to address conflicts in that local church. Now, unfortunately, Timothy's going to walk into a situation where there's conflict. And that's going to happen in any local church at any given time. You just never know when conflict can erupt. When people are hostile, they tend to hide it. They tend to cover it with a facade. But then sometimes that facade doesn't work and the hostility erupts and they can't hide it. And when that happens, then the gloves are off and you know you're dealing with a nut job. But that's all you can do. And then, you know, try to handle it as best you can doctrinally. So, again, in the case of the Philippians, it would include the desire and willingness of Paul's emissary to address conflicts in that local church, to reconcile any differences, and to restore peace and harmony within the group. And only two women are mentioned here. But given the fact that we know we're dealing with a number of house churches, we just don't know how many. But let's say there were five or six. Do you believe that, and let's say each group had, say, 10 people or something, what they could fit into a house? It depends on the size of your house and all that. And there were wealthy people there that had bigger houses than the norm and all that. So how many, you know, do you think that's the only, if there's 60, 70, 80 believers in Philippi, that there's only one set of conflict, just two people out of all that? No, there'll be other conflicts. And the challenge is when you're confronted with conflict, and it's funny because I'll watch this in a movie or a TV show or something, and I'll see conflict, and I think, why can't they just reconcile that? Until I'm the one in the conflict. And then I see why they don't want to reconcile it. But we have to, as much as it lies with us. Now, when people are recalcitrant, they won't listen, they're belligerent and implacable. Obviously, you can't do anything for that person. You just cut them loose and let God deal with them But if they're in that mindset, don't worry, they won't last long in another church anyway. Because that mindset will do you in. That you're smarter than everybody, you know it all. You pastor, been in the ministry 30, 35, 40 years, but you know more. You may. I just find it unlikely. And some of the people that I thought knew more couldn't exegete to save their souls. I mean, they couldn't even deal with the Greek. And forget how difficult the Hebrew is comparatively. But they didn't have any of this wherewithal, and yet they were convinced that they were just with it. And not good, unfortunately. So Philippians 4:3 there, indeed true companion. I ask you to help those. Help these women who have shared my struggle in the cause of the gospel. Paul's personally concerned about this because these are his friends. These are the people who have struggled with him. Together with Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. And of course, when he says help these women, the idea is help them to reconcile. To get this behind them and to restore the unity in that church that needs to be there. And to not just keep pursuing their own little personal agendas. And again, a lot has been made about this. Why is it just two women? Well, it could be two men. I'm not going to make much out of that. And the only problems you really have in your church are with the women. No, I don't think I'll go there. I think I'll pass that. And then verse 2, of course, set up this. We read verse 3, but I urge Euodia and I urge Syntyche to live in harmony in the Lord. And indicating that they weren't. But he encouraged this and then encouraged believers to help them reconcile if they could. But again, all believers have to be ready and willing to humble themselves and reconcile. And if they're not, you're not going to ever have peace. You're just not. You're not going to have unity. Well, 42, this contrast certainly does have the overall effect of singling Timothy out from other believers and should result in enhancing his reputation with others. In 43, Paul has already commanded the Philippians to place the interests of others first. We saw that in 2:4. To that command, he added the example of Christ who manifested. On a cosmic scale, the matter of putting the interests of others first, of suffering all that he suffered up to and including the death of a cross, in order to fulfill God's plan and to serve the human race. If he would offer himself as a sin offering, he will see his sacrifice and be satisfied. He has added to this his own example. That's in 2:17 there. If I am being poured out, on as a drink offering upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, if I have to suffer martyrdom in order to fulfill my niche and get you where you need to be spiritually, I'm ready to do so, he says. I'm happy about that. Obviously, he knows that death is gain. He knows that life means fruitful service. And he's willing to do either one. He's already told them, I'm willing to remain here because that means fruitful service for me. But he's also said, I'm willing to, if God's will, if this is necessary to advance God's plan for your spiritual greatness and well-being, then I'm willing to die if necessary. I'm willing to face martyrdom. He's now offered the example of Timothy here in 2:19 through 22. And finally, we're going to see the example of Epaphroditus at the very end of the end of the chapter. About his example of putting others first, because he came close to death for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was deficient in your service to me. Now that might imply, we'll get to that when we come, might imply in the English that somehow the Philippians had been less than diligent and had somehow failed Paul, but that's not what he's getting at there. And so he uses the examples of others, and the Lord himself, of course, to strengthen this deal of why Timothy is so oriented in all of this. And now, as we move on, verse 22, now you know of his proven worth. Now is the, again, just a shift in emphasis here, in addition to what he's been discussing. It's not adversative here. Now, and then you've got here the accusative feminine singular forward for emphasis. Hey, docame. D-O-K-I-M-E. Seven times. This word means the process of testing. A test, something that tests other things. It can also refer to the results of passing a test. And once one passes the test, they're proven. And that's what he's using it in that sense here. You know that Timothy is a proven commodity. You know that he has faced these kinds of tests. And you saw him, how he applied with me when we were first there. And you observed him. And you're keenly aware of how he handled himself. And so when Paul references this, this would be something that they would be readily familiar with. So the proven worth, his proven worth here, is the idea of like a genitive of possession. Timothy has. I mean, it's not actually a possession. We get it, but it's a quality. You know that is ginosko. G-I-N-O-S-K-O. Again, he doesn't use oida here. He uses a verb for recognition. A verb for figuring things out. And in this case, they would have observed it. They would have gotten this knowledge by observation. That's one of the ways ginosko can be used. You can learn things by observing them. You can learn things by being taught it by somebody else. You can figure it out on your own, sort of, as you reason through things. So you know or recognize his proven worth. You understand it. Like a child with his father. Hadi here introduces the content, as it often does, of what they know. You know that, and then this defines what it is they know. Then you have this conjunction hos, like or as, in this manner, a child, technon, N-O-N. Again, here emphasizing the superiority of the father in the relationship. The child is always viewed as the inferior. But the child was viewed in a normal Roman world, in the normal sense. Children were viewed as going to be following their fathers, emulating them, whatever their family business was. That's probably what they'd go into. But the child was there to serve the family, to serve the parents, to serve the father. And so like a child with his father, here an instrumental of association with his father, pater, the Greek word for father, with his father, he functioned as a slave. He served with me. But it's not one of the other verses. It's the verb for functioning as a slave, douleuo. D-O-U-L-E-U-O. He slaved, literally. And this would be a constantive aorist. It's defining that time when they were there in Philippi and the Philippians could see Timothy and the way he was functioning under Paul. And how he handled it, and Timothy's deferral to Paul, how he would defer to him and treat him with respect and admiration like a child would treat their father. Oh, happy Father's Day. There you go. That's my message today. Worked it in. We weren't doing a verse about mothers, or could have worked that in a month ago. But he treated Paul as one would expect a child to act with respect and all that towards his parents. I understand some parents are not really respectable. That's sad. It's unfortunate. You'd like it to be not that way. You should be able to look up to them, unfortunately. So he slaved with me. Again, instrumental here soon with the association here with me, ego. He served with me into or on behalf of or for the gospel. You got the directional preposition ice, which indicates that this was success, that he achieved what it was. He wasn't just working toward the gospel, actually. He was working into it. He was fulfilling what he was doing. Into, and then you got gospel, the definite article, euangelion, the good news, the good message. Therefore, I hope to send him immediately, as soon as I see how things go with me. This one, and again, this doesn't reflect very well in the English, but you got this demonstrative pronoun houtos here. This one, the near demonstrative. And they just translated it as him. But again, it is forward here because you have the accusative. This one, I hope to sin. Now you have this particle men. It's not translated here, but there is a corresponding duh that comes in verse 24. 22. You got men. And then in verse 24, but I trust in the Lord. So we don't, in this case, I don't think there was enough here to really set up the kind of contrast where you would translate this on the one hand or on the other hand. Because sometimes that's the way that is set up, the men construction. But therefore, so it's not translated here. Therefore, again, the inferential conjunction un. O-U-N. Therefore, but based on all this that I've told you, that his proven character, his worth, that there's nobody else I can trust, this is my considered opinion as the apostle. This is my chosen course of action. Therefore, I hope to send him immediately. Hope, again, is our verb elpizo, E-L-P-I-Z-O. Again, with maybe a little more the idea of expectation or confidence. But again, we know Paul has kind of balanced his confidence of being released with the reality that it, until it happens, he doesn't know. So he has balanced that through here. Even though I believe he fully expected to be released, and that's what happened. But until, again, it happens, he leaves out the alternative as a possibility. He holds it out. Therefore, I hope or expect to send as a complimentary infinitive. You hope to do something, and then this completes the thought of that hope. I hope to send, again using pimpo, the simple verb to send. I hope to send this one as soon as I see how things go with me. And then you actually have this word immediately, but there's some parenthetical statements in here, so I'll give you that. It's the last word in the exegesis there, exautes. E-X-A-U-T-E-S. Exautes means immediately or at once. So this one, where he talked about shortly with Timothy, this was going to be in his travel plans and his itinerary. Sending Epaphroditus was going to occur first. This was going to happen right away. But he qualifies this immediately, again, with leaving out some time frame that there may be a short period in here before I send him off. But I got the impression from doing all of this that the goal was to send, or the plan was to send Epaphroditus first, and then Timothy would follow behind slightly later. And maybe he was going to send him together. He doesn't really say. We can't rule that out. Because in both cases, he said he wanted to see about his own circumstances. So I hope to send him immediately as soon. And then this qualifies, this host here, used to denote the timing of an uncertain event. Here, as soon as, and then you have this particle that's not translated, a contingency particle, on, as soon as I determine, or I see how things go. The verb here, aorist active subjunctive, is ap orao. A-P-H-O-R-A-O. Orao has the idea of to see, like to gaze out at the horizon. We get our word horizons kind of defined from this, so it's the gaze, it's seeing kind of the big picture, gazing off into the distance. And then apo has the idea of way from. So here, to direct one's gaze, here to gain more knowledge, obviously to determine things. When he says, I'm wanting to see, he doesn't mean, you know, literally see with the eyes. He's wanting to observe how things fall out for him. So as soon as I see how the things concerning me, how I see how things go with me or my circumstances, is the way this has been consistently translated. You got the definite article, toe, in the neuter, the things, and then you got that preposition peri with the here a pronoun ego, concerning me, E-G-O. And then, of course, he says immediately, but there's this, again, parenthetical phrase here that kind of limits what immediately means. And that's why you have to be sensitive to the context, because sometimes things are qualified. Yet I trust in the Lord that I myself will also be coming shortly. Here, on the one hand, I'm going to send him now, but on the other hand, I plan on coming too, if I can. So we didn't translate all of this, but to point out it corresponds back to men there, now, yet, or but. I hope is pytho. I trust, and this means to be persuade, be persuaded. You've got a perfect indicative, which indicates the existing results that he's persuaded or convinced. I am convinced in the Lord. One could even translate this by the Lord. You've got the preposition in here with the locative or instrumental even. I trust in the Lord. I'm persuaded by the Lord that this is the way it's going to go. And again, not positional truth here as much as in God's will, in God's plan, in his understanding. I'm persuaded, I trust in the Lord that, conjunction hoti here, H-O-T-I, introduces once again the content of his trust or confidence. I trust that I myself also will be coming shortly. You've got an adjunctive use here, an additional use of the chi, myself, in addition to Epaphroditus and Timothy. So also, you got the emphatic use of the pronoun autos. I myself quickly will come. And then you had this adverb again we saw before, takeos, T-A-C-H-E-O-S. Again, quickly, without delay. And the emphasis of this word is really without unnecessary delay. What constitutes quickly can be adjusted because of the nature of the circumstances. Something might happen quickly, but circumstances meant that it's going to take slightly longer than that. But the idea here is that Paul wants to get this done, that these are his plans. So I will quickly, and then erchomai is our verb here, the last one, E-R-C-H-O-M-A-I. Erchomai, I will come. This is a predictive future. I myself will be coming shortly. That's what he fully believes. It's as much as it can be from Paul here, given his situation. It's his sort of promise to them that I want to see it. These guys there, one of them, Epaphroditus, I think, first. Timothy, maybe a little after that. And of course, once Paul, again, found out that he was going to be released, it may have happened quicker. And him, Timothy, may have gone off. Epaphroditus may have already been sent. But again, it doesn't appear that they headed back to Philippi at that point. All right, well, I've got about 9 minutes here. I don't think I want to dive into this today. So we'll just stop here and pick up here, be ready, fresh to deal with this on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your plan with like-minded believers. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our understanding and our spiritual growth and future glory. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.